From the Carver Center for Public Radio, this is Ozarks at Large for Friday, June 27th, 2014. I'm Christina Karnatz.
I'm Kyle Kellums. KUAF is supported by 121 Digital Marketing, a full-service digital agency helping local businesses with their online presence. Services include reputation and social media management, mobile and desktop website design and management, press releases, search engine marketing, and optimization. 121digitalmarketing.com for more information.
Ahead on Ozarks, can e-cigarettes help smokers reduce their consumption of nicotine? More than 20 vapor shops have opened in Northwest Arkansas alone recently. Ozarks at Large's Jacqueline Froelich looks at the phenomenon. And Jonathan Story talks about his upcoming concert in Fayetteville and plays the Mary Baker Rumsey Steinway piano.
First, State Senate Minority Leader Keith Ingram is pressuring election officials to resolve an imbalance in how counties performed in the first statewide test of 2013's voter ID law. The Democrat from West Memphis says he wants to see a more robust effort to coordinate best practices between counties.
With 1,000 Arkansas voters that were disenfranchised in the primary, and the possibility of up to 5,000 being disenfranchised, that is troubling to me, and I would think it would be troubling to the Secretary of State's office.
Responding to Ingram at Thursday's meeting of the Joint Performance Review Committee, Doug Mateo, the chief deputy at the Secretary of State's office, said each county has been notified of new ID rules, and part of a $150,000 budget was used for outreach about the new law. Ingram says a statewide body needs to take responsibility and more fully address disparities in ballot rejection rates.
A special session of the Arkansas legislature begins Monday, and there's a push by some to add legislation limiting the lottery to the agenda. The Arkansas Lottery Commission is planning to launch video monitor games this fall to help reverse declining revenue and scholarship funds. Republican Senator Bill Sample of Hot Springs says the proposed style of lottery game exceeds what was intended when the scholarship lottery began in 2009.
We're carrying this too far. We promised in the law. I mean, it says no video lottery terminals. Now, they can call it a horse a different color, but they're just using that to usurp the law.
Lottery officials have argued proposed video monitor games would be different than the video lottery terminals Senator Sample refers to, because they would not be interactive. Some opponents also continue to argue expanding the lottery hurts the poor. In recent years, the legislature, in part with Sample's leadership, has allowed expansion of the types and scale of games at casino-style racetracks like Oaklawn in Hot Springs and Southland in West Memphis.
Members of the Faster Arkansas Committee and other interested parties are hoping Governor Beebe will call a second special session later this year so the legislature can take up the issue of internet access for public schools. Jerry Jones, the executive vice president of Axiom Corporation and chair of the Faster Arkansas Committee, says the committee's recommendation to improve internet bandwidth to the state's K through 12 schools would involve giving those schools the option to tap into the state-funded R-ON fiber optic network.
And that if they're able to obtain adequate broadband access that will meet the standards that are being set and meet their particular needs from a private provider, that's just fine. And we're not saying that they're mandated or required to use the statewide network. We believe, however, that they should have the option to connect to a existing taxpayer-funded internet to capable network. They should have that option available to them. Right now, under state law, they do not have that option. Colleges and universities and community colleges are using that network, but kindergarten through 12th grade, state law are prohibited from being able to tap into the network.
The group has been working since last year on recommendations on how to improve internet access to schools throughout Arkansas. For the coming academic year, the Arkansas Quality Digital Learning Study Committee recommended 100 kilobits per second be available for every student and staff member at schools in the state to provide adequate bandwidth for digital learning programs. In the 2018-19 academic year, the recommended available bandwidth jumps to 1 megabit per second for all students and staff. Aside from changing state law to allow public schools to log on to the R-ON network, bringing the connection to schools would require some additional building out of the network over the figurative last mile to the schools themselves. Kendall Gibbons, the vice president of information technology at Arvest Holdings, says the additional network build-on wouldn't be much of an issue.
The additional build-out, and the devil's in the details for sure, because the universities, the higher education and healthcare facilities have already built out. They've anchored in the network in a lot of these areas. I would say a pretty high percentage of build-out has been done for these anchor tenants.
Estimates are not in for the cost of connecting the network to other areas that aren't served by higher education or telemedicine institutions because state law currently prohibits bidding out the project. However, members of the Faster Arkansas Committee say the additional build-out of the network would likely involve contracting with the same internet service providers who are already selling services to local school districts.
Some Eureka Springs officials are calling for improvements to the city's downtown parking. James DeVito, a city alderman and restaurant owner, says creating more parking for visitors to downtown Eureka Springs has been discussed since the early 1970s, and the lack of parking is the number one complaint the city receives from visitors. During a city council meeting earlier this week, DeVito proposed a five-level parking deck that could be built on city-owned property near the city auditorium on Main Street. He says considering the aesthetic of neighboring buildings, the deck could be built to blend into its surroundings.
For example, the Flatiron Building, which sits at the intersection of Spring and Center Street, is only about 35 years old, but I would guess that anybody that comes to town thinks it's probably 100 years old or older. I've been to Savannah and Charleston and New Orleans and studied their parking garages down there, and they've adopted facades that are in keeping with the neighborhood, and that's what I'm interested in, is something that as you walk past it, you probably wouldn't even know it's a parking garage. I do know in Savannah, at street level, they had narrow shop spaces to make it look like the ground level of the parking garage was actually a storefront, and I think that would be a perfect place for a tourist information center.
He says while building a parking deck would be a costly endeavor, state and federal grants could be sought to help pay for the project, as could proceeds from the city's 3% hospitality tax. Plus, if DeVito's proposed parking deck were completed, he says the city could collect additional proceeds through about 200 paid parking spaces.
The Northwest Arkansas Naturals continue their road trip through Texas tonight with another game against Midland. Last night, the Naturals defeated the Rockhounds 6-4. The Nats return to Springdale for their next homestand beginning Monday for a day game against Frisco.
The Walmart Northwest Arkansas Championship LPGA event is underway in Rogers. The first golfers teed off this morning, and all three rounds are being televised nationally by the Golf Channel. Among the competitors are former Arkansas Razorbacks Stacy Lewis and Emily Tubert. Lewis is currently the top-ranked golfer in the world, and Tubert, who graduated in May, is playing as a professional for the first time this weekend. The tournament continues at Pinnacle Country Club through Sunday afternoon.
Mostly cloudy tonight, lows in the lower 70s. Tomorrow, partly sunny, slight chance of showers and thunderstorms, highs from the mid to upper 80s. And for Saturday night, mostly cloudy, 40% chance of showers and thunderstorms, lows in the lower to mid 70s. This is Ozarks at Large. More than 20 new vapor shops sell electronic cigarette supplies in Northwest Arkansas. The use of e-cigarettes, referred to as vaping, is catching fire among young people who don't want to associate with the hazards of smoking and older people who are just trying to quit smoking. Ozarks at Large's Jacqueline Froelich takes us to the Velvet Vapor in Rogers.
A heavy haze hangs inside the Velvet Vapor, a smoking destination, or more precisely, a vaping destination for electronic cigarette enthusiasts who relish nicotine vapor. Rhonda Yee, along with her husband Chang Yee, are proprietors. They opened this shop last November. Rhonda opens a display case filled with mechanical operating devices, or MODs, and starter kits.
Would consist of a couple of components. One, which is your battery, which powers your tank, and this is known as an atomizer. The atomizer, which then heats up the liquid, and the liquid consists of propylene glycol, vegetable glycerin, your flavor, whether it be artificial or natural, and your nicotine.
Kits run $25 to $50, and when you suck on the mouthpiece, an internal battery activates a microprocessor controlling a light in some devices to indicate it's working, and an atomizer, which heats up the nicotine solution, called juice, to around 180 degrees, converting it into a thick, warm, white vapor. Store clerk Brianna Devine, Yee's daughter-in-law, is an avid vapor.
I use a really low nicotine level. I started out at, I want to say it was like a 12, which is about middle of the road. But I smoked full flavors for 5 years before this. And I've been vaping for about a year and a half now.
The standard nicotine level, 10 milliliter bottle of juice runs $7 plus change here, equivalent to 10 packs of cigarettes, which can run $7 each. Some e-cigarettes resemble real cigarettes, what vapers call analogs, with tan nicotine cartridges at the base attached to a white polycarbonate tube, complete with a red LED tip. But the Velvet Vapor prefers to market rechargeables, up to 300 times, refillable e-cigarettes, more environmentally friendly, they say. They manufacture all their nicotine liquid in a variety of flavors and strengths.
Well, we have anything from apple pie to watermelon bubblegum. So we have over 320 flavors. So we have something for everyone's palate, we hope.
Rhonda Yee enjoys nectarine vanilla vapor. They also carry 40 cigarette-flavored syrups, says co-owner Chang Yi.
The major brands like Marlboro, the Camels, the Newports, you know.
Velvet Vapor brand juice is sealed with child-proof lids and labeled to keep out of reach of children because of the ingredients blended to create a palpable smoking sensation.
It's your propylene glycol, which is known as PG, that gives the throat hit. Your vegetable glycerin, which is VG, and it gives you the vapor. You have your flavoring, which I said could be artificial or natural, and you have your nicotine. These are all U.S. pharmaceutical grade ingredients.
Which creates a thick white vapor. So the Yees advise patrons to not vape in public without permission. And users can adjust the amount of nicotine inhaled.
Individuals come in here, they want to quit smoking. And this is a way that has helped lots of individuals either cut themselves way back or help them quit smoking. We've seen people start at 24 nicotine and they brought themselves all the way down to zero. And then they just have, this device gives them the act of. So that smoker wants to feel the vape, they want to see the smoke, but then they're also getting their nicotine without the carcinogens and the tar.
Tobacco stimulates the brain and nervous system, increases cognition, and adjusts mood. Plus, it's an appetite suppressant. Smoking is intensely addictive, a carcinogen, and a leading cause of cardiovascular and lung disease. More than 3 million people worldwide die from smoking. So for some, e-cigarettes are a viable way to quit. According to a preliminary study published in the British journal Addiction, the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services Food and Drug Administration is not convinced, however. It seeks to regulate electronic cigarettes as a tobacco product. The agency has proposed strict marketing, testing, and review protocol for all tobacco-laced syrups, health warning imprints, and barring sales to minors. Until the Fed does something tangible, states are taking up the challenge. In early May, the Arkansas Department of Health issued a public health advisory. Dr. Gary Wheeler, MD, is medical director of the Tobacco Prevention and Control Program at the Arkansas Department of Health.
Our summary of all the data that we reviewed suggests that at this point, there is no data to show that looking at the public, not at an individual, but at the public, that e-cigarettes promote cessation. I think what there is consensus on is that if they are going to be used as cessation devices, they should be used under medical direction.
Arkansas Department of Health advisory warns that nicotine in e-cigarette vapors is addictive and known to be toxic, affecting the nervous system and heart, and increases the risk for arteriosclerosis, coronary heart disease, type 2 diabetes, obesity, and cancer. Arkansas also warns in states such as California, post in ads that nicotine is a chemical known to cause birth defects and reproductive harm, and that e-cigarettes should not be marketed as a smoking cessation product. Secondhand vapor could also pose a risk, the Arkansas advisory says. The Arkansas legislature passed several laws last session to prohibit the sale of electronic cigarettes to minors and bans their use on school property. But Dr. Wheeler says the law requires a mechanism for wide enforcement.
So our concerns are twofold. Number one, youth might try cigarettes, these e-cigarette products, thinking that they're safe, become addicted to nicotine, and then progress on to other standard cigarette products or tobacco products. And And that's been documented already. We have evidence that is going on through national surveys.
The Centers for Disease Control and Prevention found that Arkansas ranks second in the nation for smokeless tobacco use among youth. The CDC reports that nationwide e-cigarette use among middle and high school students doubled in 2012 to 1.78 million young people. Public comment period regarding FDA's proposed rules ends July 7th. At that point, e-cigarette product manufacturers, including micro-producers like the Yi family, would have 2 years to submit applications for each of their 300 nicotine-laced formulas. And once reviewed, they could not derivate. While vapor vendors like the Yi's worry the regulatory costs and possible tobacco taxes could snuff out their business, business is smoking. Novices walk through the door daily, but vapors, like this guy, enjoy hanging out.
My name's Coy Cook. I'm an officer of the court of Benton County. I switched to e-cigs, I guess, going on a year now, almost a year now. I haven't smoked in over a year. I don't know. I haven't picked up a cigarette, and I feel a lot better for it.
A Chinese pharmacist is reported to be the first to market electronic cigarettes 10 years ago to help his patients quit smoking. American vape shops started to open some 3 years ago. Today, packaged e-cigarettes are marketed under the name V2 Cigs and Joy and Top Seller Blue, sold at gas stations in the world's largest retailer, Walmart, generating a reported $1.7 billion in U.S. sales. Big tobacco will likely prevail in this market, although only a fraction of its $90 billion in sales last year. E-cigarette companies like Philip Morris and R.J. Reynolds are gaining a big purchase on vaping. Analysts predict the sales of e-cigarettes will surpass your Winstons and Camels by the next decade. For Ozarks at Large, I'm Jacqueline Froelich.
In about 15 minutes on Ozarks at Large, Jonathan Story says the Schumann he'll play at a concert next month was Love at First Sound.
Not everything that is so amazing about this piece you can see on the surface. You have to really dig, and you have to overcome some of the technical challenges to get to the beauty. And I can't say that I have overcome all the challenges yet. It's still a work in progress. But I would say that it was this piece is, I liked it when I met it, and now I've fallen in love with it.
Music from our Furman Garner Performance Studio ahead. And next, the long history of money in politics. Our history doctor is back to talk to Kyle.
This is Christopher Kimball from America's Test Kitchen. This week on our show, it's the America's Test Kitchen July 4th special. We investigate the history of American beer. We taste test ales and lagers. We make Memphis-style ribs, and we discover the very best supermarket barbecue sauce. Join us this week on America's Test Kitchen from the Public Radio Exchange, PRX.org.
Listen this Saturday at noon to KUAF Public Radio.
This is Ozarks at Large. I'm Kyle Kellums, and with me to help us understand history and what has happened before and what hasn't happened is our good friend, our history doctor, Bill Smith. How are you, sir?
I'm doing great.
Let's talk about something that is happening now in Arkansas and see how it relates to things that have happened in the past. In Arkansas in particular, but across all of the country, the impact of spending in political campaigns by these very rich individuals like the Koch brothers has become an issue with those concerned about buying influence. Media and pundits are railing at the unprecedented spending by one or two wealthy individuals. Harry Reid, Democratic Senator of Nevada, is calling for a constitutional amendment to distinguish that money is not a part of free speech. So help me put this in perspective, Bill. Have we seen this sort of thing before?
Oh, yes, we have. So this time around, the Democrats are wailing about the Koch brothers, those evil, I think you have to say it with that certain term, evil Koch brothers. Let's just think back a scant 4 to 6 years ago. The Republicans were crying about George Soros.
But George Soros doesn't go back that far, so this is what you're saying, still a pretty recent development?
Technically, yes. This is the result of the latest attempt to take money out of the political system that started in the Watergate era with the Federal Election Commission, a direct response to Richard Nixon's fundraising via the Committee to Re-elect the President, the prophetically named CREEP. Realistically, we've been buying and selling senators in this particular way for decades.
Regulating contributions is a relatively new political endeavor.
Well, until the 1972 campaign and its excesses and Richard Nixon, we didn't see the creation of the federally regulated, federally empowered commission that we have today. It started in 1974 with its first ever limits on individual contributions. Of course, McCain-Feingold tried to take that further in 2002, but that's been the subject of the recent Supreme Court decisions.
Yes, before, and some might say with those decisions now, there seem to be no limits.
Fair to say. But the way federal and other office holders raise their money has shifted a bit. You see, political patronage used to be the way that you would get elected to office and fund your campaign. It was a staple of the federal government, doling out appointments for, say, the local postmaster. On return for an assessment from their patrons, which could be as much as 15 to 20% of your federal salary going right back to the person that appointed you. A post-Civil War bill in 1876 finally removed the military from such payments, but it took the assassination of President James Garfield to bring an end to this spoil system at the federal level with the Pendleton Act in 1883. Now, that didn't stop those with means from buying influence, but it stopped those with the power to appoint from getting their money from smaller individuals.
So post-assassination of President Garfield, what was the system?
Well, the 19th century was the era of, we like to call it, the railroad senators, so named because of the influence wielded by those great corporations and the captains of industry who owned this new transportation system. Jay Cook, Cornelius Vanderbilt, Jay Gould, the Astors, they all worked to gain special favors from representatives. One of the great historical scandals of American politics involves Credit Mobilier, a financing agent for the Transcontinental Railroad that handed out free shares or greatly discounted shares to members of the House of Representatives and the U.S. Senate. Notably, Roscoe Conkling of New York and Ulysses S. Grant's vice president, Shirley Colfax. Even Garfield, the man who kind of starts some of this reform by his assassination, when Representative Garfield faced charges of $3.29, that was the value of the shares that he received while he was in Congress when he ran for president, even he couldn't escape Credit Mobilier's scandal.
But it wasn't just railroads, right?
No, industries that had a particular power in a state were highly influential in choosing who would represent their state. Remember, the 19th century was the age before the direct election of U.S. senators. So, a senator, Philieta Sawyer of Wisconsin, was a timber senator, and Senator Aldrich of Rhode Island was the Standard Oil senator. One difference, you could argue, is that the robber barons like Jay Gould were a little more agnostic in their politics than some of the wealthy individuals you see motivated to support just one party as they do today. Gould understood the bottom line, and these were his words. "It was the custom when men received nominations to come to me for contributions, and I made them and considered them good paying investments for the company. In a Republican district, I was a strong Republican. In a Democratic district, I was Democratic. And in doubtful districts, I was doubtful. In politics, I was an Erie Railroad man all the time."
Okay, so if timber had interest and other things had interest, why was the label railroad senators? Why did that stick?
Well, in part, it was because of a showdown between Theodore Roosevelt and a group of senators who were particularly beholden to the railroads in 1906 over the Hepburn Act. Remember, Teddy was the progressive reformer of his day, and with the backing of Republicans, his trust-busting moves were great until he started to press the railroads. That's where some of his friends drew the line. Collier's Magazine wrote, quote, "The mask is off. The railroad senators, bitter in defeat, have thrown political judgment to the winds and allied themselves against President Roosevelt." These same railroad senators, corporate representatives, advised him not to recommend a pure good legislation to Congress because it would injure their vested interest. So the media became involved in joining up with Roosevelt against these bought and sold politicians. However, while Collier's had a lot to do with this, nothing trumpeted the series that was in Cosmopolitan.
Cosmopolitan? The magazine,
yes.
The magazine I now see in the grocery aisle that offers 20 Great Sex Tips. That cosmopolitan.
Yes, one and the same. At the turn of the 20th century, America was filled with these new forms of media that commissioned long-form journalism to attack the problems of the day. Cosmopolitan was one of these new magazines before it became a forum for Katy Perry. It was the product of William Randolph Hearst, and a 9-part series known as Treason of the Senate became the key in exposing how these senators were on boards of directors for various companies nowhere near their home states. Influences that their allegiances were with these industries and bought through the lucrative salaries and benefits they received. So you might have a corporation that operates in Delaware that has a Californian senator on their board. They're getting a significant payment for being a board member, and funny how they seem to always line up with the interests of those corporations that they were on the boards of. So in a 1907 State of the Union address, Teddy Roosevelt, dismayed that there were no laws to, in his words, hamper an unscrupulous man of unlimited means from buying his own way into office, proposed a type of public funding for campaigns that many of today's advocates would seem to think is very familiar and very much in line with what they wanted to see happen. You know, one little side note, it's this series of articles, The Treason of the Senate, by David Graham Phillips, that inspired Roosevelt to come up with the term that's used to this day for that style of journalism. Teddy Roosevelt's the one that named it muckraking.
Every time there has been, whether it was through journalists or a president or civic-minded people, every time there's been an attempt to take the influence of money out of elections, out of politics, it seems that there's been an end around. So what's left?
Well, I think Utah Senator Mo Udall recalled in his book on politics the advice of a fellow Democratic senator. Henry Ashurst of Arizona gave him this sage advice. When you have to choose between voting for the people or the special interests, always stick to special interests. They remember, the people forget.
Well, until Karl Rove decides to work pro bono,
we're history.
Bill Smith, our history doctor, is a regular visitor to Ozarks at Large. Fayetteville Public Library continues its adult lecture series, Literary Elements, this coming Monday evening at 6:30 with Brain Music, How the Brain Works in Health and Disease, presented by Dr. Edgar Garcia Rill. This event is free. More information is available at faylib.org. This is Ozarks at Large. I'm Kyle Kellums.
I'm Christina Karnatz.
With us, Becca Martin Brown, features editor at Northwest Arkansas Newspapers.
Okay, I'm going to issue my standard disclaimer.
Kevin
so that
Kinder.
Means no, I'm talking about visual arts.
Okay.
I'm slightly better at visual arts than I am at music, not nearly as good as I am at theater, but we're going to try.
All right.
Because I have talked to a fascinating artist. Her name is Sandra Perry. Mm-hmm. She lives in New York. And she's in Fayetteville. She's been here for a video installation, an artist talk at Backspace. But she's performing Saturday at Bottle Rocket Gallery.
Yes, she is.
Here's what Sarah Loeffler says about her. I met Sandra in 2013 at an artist residency that we both attended in Michigan. She did a very stirring performance piece there in which she silently and intensely picked apart a Confederate flag that she had previously sewn out of calico type fabrics. In the background, we could hear a recording of her grandmother talking about growing up as an African-American in North Carolina. That gives you a clue that this is a really interesting woman. She said that when she started college as an undergrad, she didn't really know much about art. She'd never been to a museum. And the first week of undergrad, she saw an episode of Art 21 on PBS and went, "You can make art about this?" So she's really interesting. The performance on Saturday night is a commentary on teenage longing, respectability, and the absurdist and dangerous nature of body politics enforced upon young women of color with a splash of Iggy Stardust and DJ Screw.
Wow.
She says.
Right.
I'm unsure what this piece has to say specifically. It hasn't told me yet.
And this will be performance art.
Yes.
So it's never quite the same, obviously,
no,
ever.
No, just like theater. Right. No performance is ever the same. It's 8 o'clock Saturday at Bottle Rocket Gallery, which is on Finger Road in Fayetteville, and it is free.
Now, the thing about Bottle Rocket Gallery, it's a wonderful space, but it's
tiny.
I was going to say, not the biggest in the world, but you're right, it is tiny. So
if you want to be there
with a good line of sight,
be there.
Right.
Now, there's some other interesting things this weekend, although not nearly that eclectic.
Eclectic. Nice word. Yes.
The Buffalo River Elk Festival is in Jasper.
Yes.
With an elk calling contest. Really, how could you not want to go to that? It's all day tomorrow, and much of it is free. Music on the Square is tonight at 7 in Kingston.
See, here's what you do. You just drive down to Kingston.
Yeah, watch Brick Fields.
Yeah.
And a musician weirdly named Daniel Martin, who's from Tulsa.
Mm-hmm.
Then you go on, find a place to spend the night.
Which you can do.
And go to Jasper tomorrow. What a
great... And then you drive back and you see Bottle Rocket's performance there.
That'd be so fun.
At the gallery.
There's also original one-person shows at 7:30 tonight at Kimple Hall.
Right.
UA Theater Department. Sammy Hagar is playing tonight at the Downstream Casino in Joplin.
Right.
And an evening with Jonathan and Kara Story.
Tomorrow night at Mount Sequoia.
So I don't know how you're going to figure this out. Plus, it's also the first of the fireworks.
And Jonathan Story in, you know, about 2 minutes is going to be on Ozark
Cool.
Large. Yeah.
Nice, nice young man. If you're looking for fireworks, Saturday night at Pinnacle Hills Promenade. Mm-hmm. There's a Freedom Fest car show Saturday at Pea Ridge City Park, Sunday night fireworks at the Crosses, Freedom Fest at First Assembly of God in Pea Ridge, Freedom Sunday fireworks at the Pentecostals of Northwest Arkansas Church, the 4th of July blowout at Cedarville First Assembly of God. Check what's up today. There's a whole list of fireworks, courtesy of our summer intern, Lauren Robinson.
Very good. Good job, Lauren Robinson.
Becca Martin Brown, features editor with Northwest Arkansas Newspapers.
If we could have a dream band on NPR's Ask Me Another, I think they'd sound like this.
Istanbul, Constantinople, now it's Istanbul, Constantinople.
Join me, Ophira Eisenberg, with special guests, They Might Be Giants, and Radiolab's Jad Abumrad and Robert Krolwich for NPR's Hour of Puzzles, Word Games, and Trivia. Game on. Even
old New York. Ask Me Another begins Saturday at 11 a.m. on 91.3 FM.
This is Ozarks at Large. Friday, July 11th, Jonathan Story will sit down at the new Boston Piano inside Good Shepherd Lutheran Church in Fayetteville. He's decided to play Schumann's Etudes, a multifaceted 19th century work that is a dizzying collection of tempos and variations. He'll also perform Bach and Mendelssohn on the church organ that night. Earlier this month, Jonathan came to the Furman Garner Performance Studio to play the Schumann on the Mary Baker Rumsey Steinway piano. Normally, we talk to our Friday musical guests first, then hear them play after that. But for this visit, Jonathan lit up the keys for the entire Schumann before sitting down for our conversation. Here is the final portion of his performance.
Thank you.
I should tell people, you are literally perspiring.
Yes, I am. I've just expended more energy than I do in P90X yoga. So quite a workout.
How do you select what you want to play for people?
I try to balance inspiration with what I consider would be beneficial for my technique and my musicianship. And I felt like in playing the Schumann Symphonic Etudes that I had found a piece that would do both. One that has moments of great beauty, moments of bombast, and, you know, was very inspiring, but at the same time would develop me more as a pianist.
There are more moments of beauty and bombast, and sometimes they're smack dab against each other.
Correct. Mm-hmm.
So, not from a technical point of view, but from a mental or emotional point of view, is that difficult?
You start with the approach towards this piece that, of course, it is basically a theme in variations. And so there are short episodes, some lasting 30 seconds or less, the longest being 4 minutes, which is the finale. And you just have to be able to create those differing emotional moods that are portrayed in the piece. And in doing so, you have to draw upon, for me, I have to draw upon some of my own experiences in my mind and in my heart, really.
Are they the same? I mean, the same experiences you're drawing on when you play for me in here as they will be when you perform in front of an audience?
I think that they're similar because when I walked in here today, my conviction was that I would just focus. Whatever else I did, I would focus, and I would completely focus on the music. Now, a couple of times, and I love your studio because we have windows that look out, and you can see the sun, and you can see people walking by. A couple of times, I even noticed a couple of people walking by, but my mind didn't even go there. I was so focused on the music.
It makes sense that you like yoga, then.
Mm-hmm.
On the surface, it would appear that there's a similarity, the focus.
Sure. The level of focus required for playing a piece like this is often achieved by the type of focus, meditation that you have in yoga and really some other forms of working out.
Now, you just played it through for me. I know that sometimes pianists, when they're getting ready, will just play certain parts over and over again. Do you do that?
I do, every day. In fact, the third to last variation is considered to be the hardest of all of them, the most difficult. And my wife will tell you that at 7 every morning, I get up and go in the music room and I start with that. I play it 20 minutes, 25 minutes.
Just over and
over and over, 88 on the metronome, 90, 92, 94, 96. If I miss a note, I go back. And I do that with each one of the variations.
It looked to me as if you were really having a good time. Mm-hmm. You were enjoying it.
I was. In fact, I enjoy playing this piece more than I've ever enjoyed playing anything.
The first time you and the piece met, did you enjoy it?
It's complex, actually.
Yeah.
It's not everything that is so amazing about this piece you can see on the surface. You have to really dig, and you have to overcome some of the technical challenges to get to the beauty. And I can't say that I have overcome all the challenges yet. It's still a work in progress. But I would say that it was, this piece is, I liked it when I met it, and now I've fallen in love with it.
How did the concert come to be at Good Shepherd?
Well, Bob Mueller and Tess Delaplane, who are both on faculty at the U of A Music Department, are good friends of mine. We worked together back in January on an opera that was put on by Opera Fayetteville.
Which was fantastic, by the way.
Thank you. Yes. And, of course, Bob conducted. Tess played in the orchestra. And we sort of renewed our friendship at that time. Now, a little background. They were both my professors in college. Bob was my Theory 4 professor, and Tess was my Theory 1 professor. She put up with me in her Theory 1 class, so I feel like if I have a good performance at the Lutheran Church, then maybe that'll go a long way.
Atone. Yeah.
But we had talked about the fact that the church recently got a new Boston piano, which is it's a cousin of Steinway, made by the Steinway company. And so Bob said, well, why don't you come over and do a concert at the church? And I've always wanted to play a concert in that room. Beautiful sound, great organ, by the way, and of course, having gone over and played the piano, it's phenomenal too.
Yeah, this will be a piano and organ performance.
Correct. Mm-hmm. I play both instruments. I love both instruments. They're very different. But I'll be playing Bach, Mendelssohn, and Moulez on the organ, and then Schumann on the piano.
You sell homes.
I do.
That's something you do professionally.
Four closings in 4 weeks.
Would, if someone was on the fence about buying a house from you and said, you know what, we've got a piano, we'll buy it if when we move in you come in and christen the house, would you do that?
Of course. I've already promised one of my clients a okay. concert, and yeah. they bought their house in February. They hadn't called it in yet. So I'm glad they've given me a little time to practice before doing so.
What would you play? What would you play for that?
Whatever they were requesting.
Oh, wow.
And in fact, if they were really lucky and if they were really good clients, I might bring my wife along, who's a great jazz singer.
Yeah.
But pretty much it would be up to them.
Do you guys ever do As Time Goes By?
Oh, yeah.
Really?
Sure. Yeah, I'll play it for you if you want me to. That's one of my favorite.
Okay. You strike me as someone who doesn't, you're not jealous either if you see someone play a great piece very
yeah,
well.
I'm completely happy for people's accomplishments. And, you know, I had a friend back in college who, he was from Detroit originally, came down here to college same time I did, and that guy could play octaves as fast as I play scales. And he was technically flawless, amazing. And never was jealous of him. I'm happy for what other people can do and completely comfortable in my skin musically and with what I'm capable of.
Jonathan Story will perform an organ and piano concert at Good Shepherd Lutheran Church in Fayetteville on Friday night, July 11th. The concert begins at 7 and it is free to the public. He'll also be in performance tomorrow night in a concert of a different kind. It's with his wife, Kara, inside Clapp Auditorium on Mount Sequoia in Fayetteville for an evening of standards. Tickets for their concert tomorrow night are $10. This is Ozarks at Large.
This we like the party. We is one of the most sampled songs of all time. So what's really original?
I think you'd be really hard-pressed to listen to something today and not be able to at least find four bars of it that's completely derivative of something else.
I'm Guy Raz. Music, inventions, philosophy, art, everything is a remix. Next time on the TED Radio Hour from NPR.
Listen Sunday at noon to 91.3 FM.
This is KUAF 91.3 FM. Fayetteville, Fort Smith, Bentonville, Blue Eye, Missouri, and Blue Eye, Arkansas.
All right. I have blue eyes. So do you.
Do I?
Sort of.
I thought they were green.
Well, they're kind of hazily okay. from here.
Yes. That's what my mother always told me. You had wonderful hazel eyes. But we're saluting Blue Eye, Missouri, and Arkansas today.
Not us.
No.
KUAF is supported by contributing listeners and by Stonebridge Meadows Golf Club, located off Highway 16 East in Fayetteville and welcoming golfers since 1997. Membership information, book a tee time, tournament information, and more available on the web at stonebridgemeadows.com.
Let's see, we have things to give away. We have many things.
Lots and lots of things to give away. We have 4 tickets to any Naturals baseball game. Not too many left.
Not too many left. They returned. Their next homestand begins Monday, and that's a day game, but they've got a homestand. You just turn these vouchers in, and they exchange them for best seats available for the day you go.
Mm-hmm. We also have 4 tickets to any Malco movie. In our area.
Right. Malco Movie Theater. Mm-hmm. There is the disclaimer that, like, you can't use these the first day something comes out.
Right.
The Blockbuster. But
if you check the Malco website, it says no passes next to what you can't use passes on.
But you can use them for most movies, yes.
Mm-hmm. And then also, is that 4 tickets? 4 tickets to Mystery Science Theater 3000's riff of the film Sharknado.
Right. Sharknado, which was a TV movie, but it was so bad it became this sort of cultural phenomenon. Now they're going to show it on the big screen. Now, the MSTK 3000 characters won't be at the theater, but it'll just be like watching it at home if you're familiar with that.
It's live.
It is live.
What you're
it
seeing on
live.
The screen is actually happening somewhere. So there's that. That's
they're
cool.
riffing live,
And but this is a particular date, though.
Absolutely it is. Mm-hmm. It is July 10th. So you've got the 4 baseball tickets, the 4 movie passes, the 4 specific movie passes to the Sharknado event, and then 2 tickets to any performance of your choosing of Opera in the Ozarks. All the other things we're going to mail you. The Opera in the Ozarks will give you the number to call, and you'll pick those tickets up at will call at Inspiration Point. And you can go to opera.org to see the full Opera in the Ozarks schedule.
There are lots and lots of opportunities between now, and I believe it's July 18th.
It is.
I think is the date.
Right.
Right. So lots of opportunities. I am going on Monday evening. For the Sondheim Into the Woods.
Right.
That's right. I've been going at least once a summer for the last few years, and it's beautiful. It really is. The drive kind of up by the lake, and anyway.
It's very pretty. So who won all of this?
Well, we have John Allen and Blake Davidson.
John, Blake, congratulations. Thanks for listening. I'll email you here in just a moment to find out your mailing address and give you the information for Inspiration Point and Opera in the Ozarks to make your reservations
that
there.
Sounds good.
All right. Busy weekend in Northwest Arkansas, of course. We're going to end today's program with some music from a familiar source, but I bet you've never heard it.
That's right. The Kate Brothers Band. This was recorded, 30 years ago?
32 years ago in Malibu for an EP that never was released until right about now. They're called the Malibu Sessions and recorded in 1982 in California. Earl and them are playing the happy hour tonight at George's Majestic Lounge on Dixon Street in Fayetteville. The Kate Brothers Band will play July 4th in Bentonville. We're going to have more about this historic recording and its eventual release next week on Ozarks at Large. This is the song called Don't Need a Woman Like That. And if you listen to the slide guitar, Bonnie Raitt.
Wow.
Yeah. So the name of the EP, The Malibu Sessions, this is Don't Need a Woman Like That, the Kate Brothers Band from 1982. Ozarks at Large, a production of KUAF. I'm Kyle Kellums.
I'm Christina Karnatz.
Thanks so much for listening. We're back Sunday
for Weekend Ozarks at Large.
I know that a woman, she looks so fine, but let me tell you, it's a waste of time. She may look just like a perfect lover. Don't need a